Up next on NHL Fantasy on Ice, Pete and Rob have the trends to know and DFS picks for each series. Lining pockets since October. A tight series out west. Who has the edge going forward? And the Bruins have the broomsticks out. The conference finals roll on. It's NHL Fantasy on Ice.
Pete and Rob back with you here on this Thursday morning, talking fantasy, talking conference finals. And Rob, we're fresh off the game of the conference finals so far. Game three between the Blues and the Sharks. What a dandy.
Easily. That was a total classic in my book. We saw great action right out of the gate. Literally the first shift of the game, there were high quality chances, and I just had a feeling after seeing that we knew we were in for one.
And we got the first, not only the first goal, but also the second goal of the postseason, all in one shot from Erik Karlsson. But of course, the last goal in overtime was the controversial one. It was a potential hand pass. It was hard to see, in my opinion, whether or not Timo Meier made direct contact with the puck, but everybody was up in arms about it. But the bottom line is that the Sharks, once again, they found a way to come back in this game, and they were pretty much in deep trouble up until the final minute before the end of the game.
Well, it was really nice to see the resiliency from St. Louis. When they were down 2-0, it kind of felt like something was going on where San Jose could have just taken over that game, but they didn't. David Perron was a player for the Blues that really stepped up. He was one of my DFS picks, by the way, so that one really hit. But that, you know, it just shows so much how this Blues team really is meant to be here. They have different lines rolling, different lines scoring. Tarasenko got an even strength goal last night. Great little wrist shot coming down the off wing. So that stuff, I mean, look, this Blues team, I know they ended up with a bad result in overtime there, but I really do believe they'll respond in game four.
And both teams have been responding in each of the past two games. We saw the Sharks down a couple of goals, and then Couture scored two of them in game two. Then Couture scored the tying goal. But of course, you mentioned the Blues second period. That was a great response after falling behind 2-0 in game three. And I think we should note that we didn't dismiss the St. Louis Blues after game one, but we kind of looked forward for the Sharks to face the Bruins, and maybe that did a little disservice to the St. Louis Blues, who belong here, like you said, and this series is probably going to go six or seven based on the looks of it right now.
It feels that way to me. Remember that play? It was a minute left in the game, and Jaden Schwartz had that chance to score the empty netter, and it kind of went off the side of the post. I couldn't believe that.
They had chances
I could to not
score the empty
believe
netter.
That. And then you,
crazy.
And then unfortunately, for everybody else, it comes down to that final overtime kind of controversial goal. And, you know, you hate to be talking about that the next day. But regardless, I think to your point, this is a series that's probably going to go a minimum of six. And if we do get a game seven here, I think it's going to be a real fine series.
And the Blues scored the four goals in the second period, and then the whole first 19 minutes of the third period was scoreless. I mean, Martin Jones also kept them in that game, by the way. But how about Logan Couture? I mean, once again, coming up huge. He's got, 14, 15 goals in the postseason? Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that already had 30 points in the 2016 run. So you look across the league, players that elevate their game to this time of year, I don't think there's anybody better than Logan Couture.
And that one was chippy last night, too, in the final minute. He just really out-muscled. They had three guys pretty much in the crease just trying to work that puck over to him. Finally got free, put it in the back of the net. And yeah, what an absolute treat. But I think looking forward to game four, I mean, St. Louis, there's not a lot of adjustments I think they need to make. They played a pretty sound game. Their power play looked a lot better than it has, in round two at least, when it pretty much did nothing against Dallas. So that's at least a pretty bright spot for them moving forward.
That's something, that's a positive to look at. I mean, they snapped an 0-for-18 drought. They went 1-for-1 in this game. That's 100%. That's something to put on the bulletin board. Hey, they made some changes. I saw Parayko was playing on the first power play unit. Maroon was playing there, Bozak was playing there, and then of course Perron joined them mid shift and scored the goal. So big night from Perron, big bounce back night for the power play. And I think we talked about it before game three. Whoever wins game three, the other team's probably going to win game four. So maybe we're looking at a game five back in San Jose all tied up.
And another thing to St. Louis's credit, the Barbashev line played really well last night too. They were getting some really good chances. San Jose, I think, got caught kind of taking some slower changes at times, but St. Louis's speed really kind of exposed San Jose. And Martin Jones, oh my gosh, for the Sharks, he made some big-time saves last night. In the third period, I think there was a couple onslaughts the Blues had where you just felt like they were going to get that one goal to really put this thing away, but he came up big last night.
There was a save on Perron on the doorstep.
Yeah, and for then a
there
hat trick.
And then there was another save on Shen, and Shen still can't buy a bucket right now, but certainly Martin Jones. People were talking, once again, everybody on Twitter was chirping about should they pull Martin Jones, put Aaron Dell. Can we stop with this, whether it's Binnington or Martin Jones? Stick with the guy who got you here, and each of those guys has shown their mettle at many different points. I would not even consider a goalie change, regardless of what happens from here on out in this series for the Blues or the Sharks.
Well, it's kind of hard to predict game four in a way because we saw San Jose get up to a two-goal lead on the road, and then St. Louis get back in the game, take the momentum right out from under the Sharks. So if you're the Sharks heading into Game 4, obviously your key to the game is scoring first again, but that doesn't seem to phase the Blues at all.
I did see the Sharks improve to 7-1 when scoring first, for what it's worth. That's pretty damn good. But yeah, the Blues are resilient. We saw it in all those series, the series against Dallas. We thought they were dead in game six. They bounced back. We saw it against Winnipeg. They lost game three and four at home. You thought they were going off the rails. So this Blues team will probably get it done. If you're playing DFS or if you're wagering, I would say, I mean, they'll probably be the favorite anyway, but I say very strong chance that the Blues get it done in game four. And then we're faced with something very exciting here. I mean, the other series, meanwhile, looks like it could potentially be a sweep, but the San Jose St. Louis series as advertised so far.
As totally as described. And I don't think it gets much better than two. I think the thing I want to say is that every time you watch St. Louis, I notice something different about them that I like. I notice a different player. Like Robert Thomas has looked great, even though he didn't get on the score sheet. I mean, there are different guys like that that really just seem to catch your eye throughout a game where you can just tell that this team is really high quality. And then Jordan Binnington, too, last night. He made some big stops as well. So, yeah, I think, you know, this series to me, Game 4, it's going to be hard to predict, and it's probably more than likely going to be a one-goal game, judging by how last night went. But that doesn't mean the Sharks can't win it. It doesn't mean the Sharks can't go back to the Shark Tank with a 3-1 lead, and all of a sudden St. Louis is really on their heels. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Joe Thornton score again in Game 4, and then kind of the Sharks, maybe Pete DeBoer can make an adjustment, learn from the 2-0 lead that they blew in Game 3, and say, we need to lock this thing down.
And how about Joe Thornton, by the way, with his first career in 170-something games, first career playoff multi-goal game, and had 3 points. It was almost like clockwork for him. He hasn't been playing so well lately, but he scored that one goal on the doorstep and then, you know, just kept producing throughout the game. And, yeah, contributions from the third line are so key. St. Louis has gotten it, and now we saw a glimpse of it for San Jose.
I just worried a little bit about the Sharks' defense because there were shifts where Carlson, again, he had 2 goals. You can't, you know, he had the OT winner. You can't take anything away from him. But there were a couple shifts where he pinched, and then the other guy, even Pat Maroon was going the other way at one point, I think on a 2-on-1 or maybe even a 1-on-0, until I think it was Brendan Dillon that got back and kind of made some interruption. But that worries me a little bit. It's like when they're up and playing with a lead, like you got to kind of sit back. I know it's hard to tell Erik Karlsson that, the offensive dynamo that he is, but if you're Pete DeBoer, he made good adjustments heading into the game three because he switched up the third line. But I think you've got to make another adjustment here and say we need to sit back more. We really need to sit back, block more shots, stay in the lanes.
And the defenseman storylines are so huge in this series, from Carlson, all his ups and downs in game three. Vince Dunn was injured, left the game, got hit in the face with the puck. So you don't know how much time he's going to miss, but he might not play in game four. So that's significant. But Colton Parayko was one of my players of the game. He played almost 30 minutes. He had 3 assists. He locked down Logan Couture for the vast majority of that game. They actually couldn't get him on the ice for that last shift. And lo and behold, Couture scores to tie the game. But hats off to Colton Parayko. He's shown us a lot this postseason and moving forward. Still a very young defenseman.
He had a great sort of, I'd like to call it a bounce back, because of how his regular season performance was. A lot of people in fantasy had drafted him in the later rounds, as they always do with those St. Louis guys. But he did under-deliver in the regular season. I won't be shy about that. But his postseason performance has been nothing short of marvelous. And that pass where he set up Perron on the power play, oh my gosh.
Yeah, Parayko is money. Perron really stepped up when the Blues needed him most. It's going to be interesting to see how the defense pairs are constructed in this game four, how the Blues really deal with what was an absolute, let's be honest, it was a disaster. It was disheartening how that game ended, considering how well they played. Probably their best period of the whole playoffs, I thought, in the second period. Couldn't hold on to it, and then disappointing fashion, no matter which way you think the call went. It's not how you wanted to see this game end for St. Louis.
I will say, in their locker room post game, it sounded like a lot of the guys had the right mentality. A lot of talk about moving forward, looking ahead, I heard, were kind of the two big buzzwords. So whatever Berube said to them after the game, I think their heads are in the right place moving forward. And then let's move forward ourselves to Boston, Carolina. Boston's up 3-0 in this, Pete. I mean, is there a shot here for in the dark that Carolina can even get back in this thing?
I guess there's a shot in the dark that they could win game four, but they're not winning game five. I think we've seen enough of this series through thick and thin to tell us that the Carolina Hurricanes are no match for the Boston Bruins, from the fourth line to the first line to the defense pairs to the goaltending. Tell me one thing that Carolina is doing better than Boston. I can't find one. The only glimmer of hope, I guess, for Carolina entering elimination scenarios is Justin Williams.
Here we are talking about Justin Williams again in an elimination game. Stop us if you've heard this before, but every single time that he gets into this situation, he gets on the scoreboard. So, and his teams are pretty good in elimination too. So we'll see if they do win game four at home. You know, it just, to me, they're lost in international waters right now. I mean, this is a really bad situation to be in for them. They're going back to Curtis McElhinney. He's been confirmed to start for game four. He played well in game three. Let's give him a round of applause for that. He did play well.
He wasn't the reason they lost that game.
Was not the reason they lost that game. But other than Justin Williams, I mean, who is it going to be for that team to really step up and make the difference?
I mean, when you see a guy like who has powered the Hurricanes all postseason, Jacob Slavin, play almost 30 minutes in a regulation game in game three and not have any points, I mean, he is in over his head. I mean, he's doing a phenomenal job even just keeping that game close, but there's not enough. There's not enough in the camp of the Carolina Hurricanes to contend with this team when you're playing them every single night. Maybe on an off night in the regular season when the Bruins aren't taking you seriously, you could win a 5-2 game at home like they did back in whatever it was, December. But yeah, this is with the adjustments. I mean, even the fact that Carolina could not take advantage of that 20 shot on goal first period at home, where you have the crowd revving you up, you can't score. Plus, Justin Williams had three penalties in the first period. I mean, that made matters worse for a team that already could not finish.
And it did, and we highlighted that after game two when he got into the tiff with Marchand. We said, this is really kind of coming off the rails. And sure enough, it directly translated into his three penalties in game three. So that, you need to dial that in. You can't put that Boston team, you can't give them any more help than they already have. So forget putting them on the man advantage. You've got to play them at even strength. And to me, I'm just not seeing anybody on Carolina getting some push at even strength. We saw Warren Fogle be one of their sort of surprise players through the first two rounds of the playoffs. He's not really getting the bounces anymore. Okay, so who is going to get the bounces? Who's going to get the breaks? I just don't think they have the firepower to even create breaks for themselves anymore in the playoffs.
And their power play is not helping matters either. You're talking about even strength, but the power play has been worse. They went 0-for-5. a lot of power play opportunities in game three. Bruins went 1-for-5, I believe. They went 0-for-5, but they're like 1-for-12 in the series. They scored on that first power play opportunity of the series, and there's been absolutely nothing since. So are there any, I mean, other than the obvious, we always talk about Dougie Hamilton, throw him out there, but are there any other potential adjustments on this power play, or are we just like beating a dead horse here?
I think we've just talked about this too much the entire postseason. If they haven't figured it out, I don't know what we're going to figure out here sitting in New York City. I mean, it's just like,
that's true.
I just don't know what else they can try. I mean, maybe get Svechnikov, keep him out there for the full 2 minutes. I'm just a little flabbergasted at the fact that they can't, guys like Aho, Teravainen, they're so good, they're so finesse with the puck, but they can't even find seams out there. Boston and Brandon Carlo and those big defensemen, they're really just shutting this thing down. Charlie McAvoy had 4 blocks in Game 3.
McAvoy, I mentioned Slavin earlier, but McAvoy is a guy who shoulders the heavy workload. He's been playing on the second power play as usual, but that second power play has scored a couple of goals here. David Krejci, I know, has 2 power play points already, and David Krejci, who plays with McAvoy on that second unit, nobody's been, other than Logan Couture, nobody's been more consistent than David Krejci in terms of points per game, like at least a point in a number of games. He has 12, at least a point in 12 games out of 16. So, I mean, he's been more consistent than even the top dogs for Boston.
That's what concerns me for whoever's going to play Boston. Sorry for Carolina fans, but I just can't see them coming back in the series. So for whoever's going to play Boston potentially in the Stanley Cup final.
Likely.
Yeah, that's a better word to use, but I don't see how even these teams in the West can compete with Boston's top 3 lines right now. The Charlie Coyle line, even to double down on your Krejci take, the Charlie Coyle line's been great this playoffs. Marcus Johansson has been a really underrated deadline acquisition by them. So I'm just not seeing it, because the Western Conference teams are going to beat them each other up. That could go 6 or 7. And then you have a Boston team that I guess could be cursed by getting some extra rest. But to me, that's probably the only situation that it benefits a team, because you've played 3 rounds now and you do probably need a little bit of a breather.
It's funny, some of these trends, right? The reverse sweeps. The Penguins got swept by the Islanders. Then the Islanders got swept by the Hurricanes. Now the Hurricanes might get swept by the Bruins. I don't think we'll see another sweep after that, but this is crazy. And also another trend to note, none of these teams that had extended rest, from the Avalanche to the Hurricanes in this case, to the Islanders, the Blue Jackets, none of them ended up winning their next series, for what it's worth. But it's something to keep in mind, maybe if Boston has extended rest here and then the West Series maybe goes the distance.
That's true. And we'll give Colorado credit there, because they did take it to Game 7. That was totally a coin flip. But I do see that logic, and I think there is something that you kind of take your foot off the gas, you have time to slow down, you get a little bit lazy in practice maybe. But I don't think that Boston team, they are just so talented on paper and on the ice, that I think that they are probably exempt from any sort of curse like that.
I just feel like they're going to beat whoever they end up playing in the West. I mean, these teams are so resilient, both San Jose and St. Louis. They take advantage of their opportunities, take advantage of their breaks along the way. But Boston is just a different gear, I think. And not to look too far ahead, but that's the way I'm leaning in the Cup Final. And that's actually why I, at the beginning of the playoffs, when I had San Jose and Boston from the beginning of the year, I flipped the winner. So I flipped the winner before the playoffs to Boston from San Jose. And I'm kind of glad that I did, just because of what I've seen from Boston. They've exceeded my expectations in terms of their depth. And they're just well-rounded play.
And I stayed with San Jose because I do believe they have more upside, but they also have more weakness, if that makes any sense.
Me too.
With the way that they play, if they put it all together for a full 60 minutes, nobody's beating them. But they never do that. They go these lapses where Carlson will have a goal, and then for 2 shifts in a row, he'll give up an odd man chance. So you live by the sword, you die by the sword. But I always gravitate towards liking to watch teams that do that. They get a little risky. They play with fire. They gamble. I like that.
I agree. I think that other than the 3 game ones, which I believe they won all 3, the Sharks, this postseason, they have not played a full 60-minute game. Seriously, name me one game that they played full 60 minutes. I can't. They almost lost to the Avalanche in Game 7. Some of those Vegas games, even that they won, were all over the place. The Game 6 that went to double overtime. That Game 7, they were down 3-0 in the first period. I mean, in the second, third period, whatever. But, yeah, I think that the Sharks are flawed to an extent, but their talent is the overriding factor that keeps them going. And really, anytime this team gets a break, they take full advantage of it. So you got to give them some credit for that.
That's a really underrated thing you just said, because there are teams that when they get a break, they don't have anything to show for it. They can't score a goal. The Sharks, however, can. So the breaks, I know that they've gotten far too many already this postseason. And you know what? If they get to Game 7, they're probably not getting another break. So for that, you got to think about going into Game 4 for them in St. Louis and really just trying to put together that 60 minutes.
And they've also responded well when breaks have gone against them. I know that Game 2 against Vegas where they took the goal away from Couture on the goalie interference and then put him in the penalty box. I mean, they responded well from that in the series. There was the LeBanc goal disallowed against Colorado, I think, in Game 5. And then also in that last game, Game 3 for the Sharks, not to go all the way back to the Sharks, but they had a pretty blatant play that David Perron lifted the puck into the stands,
right,
and it wasn't called. I mean, it's not a reviewable play. We've said that a couple of times already in this talk about this game, that the play wasn't reviewable, but that's something that after that call didn't go their way, David Perron scored two goals before the end of that period, and then San Jose still ended up winning the game.
That's right, and it did just dawn on me that if Boston wins Game 4, we will be in a situation now, Pete, where we have off days of hockey, so there will be nothing to watch except for only every other day. So that's kind of a sad reality, just how quickly it's gone by this year. But, you know, we'll see. I do think Boston closes it out in Game 4, and then San Jose, St. Louis probably is a coin flip if you're walking a straight line there. So,
well, we're looking forward to getting to some of these other overarching topics that pertain to next season, in addition to breaking down the conference finals and eventually the Stanley Cup final. But we already have, you know, some coaching changes that we're excited to get to. We're going to be doing our sleeper and bounce back lists, everything like that, a little bit earlier this year to get everybody primed for the draft and everything like that. So a lot of good content on the way, and maybe we can use some of those off days to our advantage.
I think we'll be able to find something to talk about, Pete. Also, look at other NHL podcasts. There's Draft Class out right now, which is breaking down all you need to know for the draft in Vancouver this year. And then Executive Suite, they've gotten some big time interviews lately with people all around the league, including NHL executives too. So also be sure to check that out.
Also, leave us a review if you get the chance on iTunes or any of the platforms you're listening to. So for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of these Stanley Cup conference final matchups for as long as they last, especially for Carolina's sake. But we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.